Disclaimer: the views and opinions expressed in Radio DMG may or may not be the views and opinions of the DMGI's family of sites. All music used in this podcast is the property of whoever made it, and no copyright infringement is intended. God bless this albatross, and hold on tight for the awesome you're about to receive.
It's good to be the king.
Welcome to Radio DMG. I am your host, Philip Wesley, and today is Saturday, June 18th, 2011, and the time is very early in the morning, so this will be a slightly lower and somewhat shorter broadcast today. Actually, in fact, today is going to be another one of those that's 100% pure newsity opinion. Actually, what I'm going to do is go over a little bit of what was announced at E3 2011, Akon 22, and give you a little bit about what is coming up on Radio DMG. So I invite you to sit down, take a load off, relax, and enjoy just a pure conversation about E3 and Akon and several other events that so more or less happen these days. So, let's start with what was announced at E3 2011. Now, Nintendo announced their new system, the Wii U, and there's a little bit of backstory for it, which I will go into. But first, let's go ahead and get some of the big announcements out of the way. Well, the important announcements, the ones that have to do with portables. Since the Wii U is not really a portable, its controller kind of is, and was, at one point. I'm just going to handle what happened for the 3DS, the DS, and the PSP, and the Vita. A lot less PlayStation Portable games were shown at the show than I thought would be. Oh well, the PlayStation Vita was announced, $249.99 for the GIMP version, and $299.99 for the GIMPier version. The GIMPier version has 3G compatibility with AT&T, which is awful. And of course, using that 3G, they also have a GPS in there, which there isn't really much of a purpose to that one. Although, they might actually have a few more processor abilities in the $299.99 one. There's no release date yet for the PlayStation Vita, although they expect to ship it in Japan this year. They also showed off for the PlayStation Vita a couple more games. There was a Street Fighter vs. Tekken, or as Street Fighter X Tekken, was a big surprise. And for that one, the big surprise was also that they put Cole from Infamous in it. Overall, Sony's press conference was more or less them apologizing for about 30 minutes for being hacked. And that was kind of, I guess the best way to put it would be embarrassing, sad, annoying. Then they went out and announced a bunch of stuff for the PlayStation Move and for the PlayStation 3 that I don't really care that much about. Except for Sly Cooper 4, which, honest to goodness, I like the Sly Cooper franchise. And I think it would have been icing on the cake if they would have announced one for the PlayStation Vita. Oh well, maybe next time, Sony. Overall, it was pretty decent. The PlayStation Vita is $250 worth of kit, or $299 worth of kit. You know, $250 or $300 worth of kit. And it's pretty nice. The games shown off for it were an Uncharted version where that you can control it traditionally, or you can mess up and put fingerprints on that nice OLED screen by uselessly touching it. Right now, a lot of the touch functionality for the PlayStation Vita is ridiculously gimmicky. I haven't seen anything yet except for Little Deviants, which uses that touch capability to an interesting and unusual sense. Although there is a Little Big Planet game coming for it, which allows you to do a lot of customization via the screen, which is kind of cool. They had Mod Nation Racers up there too, which also used your finger as kind of a stylus to draw tracks. And then looking through that, I realized, yeah, without those little iPad styluses, the ones which work on that type of touchscreen, it's not really worth it. A lot of these touch capabilities were just essentially tacked on, kind of like what happened with a lot of early Nintendo DS items, and what will happen with a lot of early Wii U titles. Overall, I thought that Sony's conference was an impressive apology. For the most part, I was bored. And then when they brought out the PlayStation Vita, did their whole PlayStation lifestyle spiel, and then announced the price was the best part. Some of the games shown, like there's a BioShock spinoff, there will be a couple of them. There's a VanillaWare game for it called, I think, like Dragon Core or something. Not Dragon Crisis, sadly, although that would make a pretty good game. The several people who actually watch that anime will get the gist of it and be like, yay, he mentioned that. Well, it's a good, pretty decent show. Nobody's licensed it in the US, so don't worry about it. Anywho, back to the PlayStation Vita. The device, it's almost the size of the Wii U controller, but it's still good. I think it'll be an interesting device. There's no HDMI outs, there's no video out, which is an unfortunate mistake in my opinion. And it's not guaranteed to be compatible with a lot of the, let's see. It won't use your UMDs, of course. It won't have built-in storage, so the dozens of PlayStation Portable Minis and PS1 games and PSP games I own will have to wait for me to cough up about $200, $300 for a 32-gig brand-new-style memory card. That's really the worst part of the PlayStation Vita, and that's why it's going to fail. I don't think that Monster Hunter will be able to help it when it comes time to, let's see. Yeah, Monster Hunter Portable 4 or whatnot on the PlayStation Vita will be very pretty looking. However, when you're paying 250 yen or for the system itself, and then you're paying about that for a decent memory card, because it's using proprietary technology again. It's like when they pretty much put out the little M2 micro stuff for the PlayStation Portable Go, and that was that, and aside from a couple phones, was the only thing that used it. The PlayStation Vita has its own memory card style, and it looks like the games are going to be 50 to 60 each. Now, we all balk at $34 to $40 games on the 3DS and on the DS. We're going to balk again at $50, $60 games on the PlayStation Vita. In a way, I feel that the PlayStation Vita lineup or launch lineup could be very compelling in the same way that the 3DS launch lineup was very compelling. I mean, when your strongest draw is a fighting game, I want Street Fighter X Tekken at just as much as I want Super Street Fighter 4 3DS, which at this moment where I'm recording, I still have yet to buy. Yes, it's very pretty, but I didn't buy it. Fighting games, aside from, say, Dead or Alive, don't really sell me on a system. It's the amount of adventure games and such. And right now, I do want to know more about that Bioshock. I do want to see Rayman Origins on it. And I do want to see some of the other games that are out for it. But at this point in time, a lot of what I would be playing on the PlayStation Vita is older PS1 and PSP games, especially with that second analog stick and what you can assign it to. It would make a lot of those a lot easier to play, especially if they've got camera work. However, because of the size restrictions that they've placed on games in there by using their own proprietary technology, Sony has gone ahead and shot themselves in the foot on the PlayStation Vita by being, well, by nature of being Sony. That said, I feel that Nintendo did themselves a disservice as well by putting the 3DS at $250. However, they went a long way with their press conference to validate the purchase of the Nintendo 3DS. So that's what I'm going to get into now. Now, if you own a DS, don't worry. You're getting Professor Layton 4, a brand new Kirby game. I think it's like Kirby Massive Attack. You're getting Super Fossil Fighters. You're getting, this was announced a little bit after E3, but Sola Turbo, which is essentially Tales Concerto sequel, however, you know, kind of like, if it reminds people a bit of Tales Concerto, which was an old PS1 game, which was brilliant. It was a great game, but kind of hard to find, and it's not on PlayStation Network, which is kind of sad, because it was kind of like Mega Man Legends in the way that it played. But we're getting Sola Turbo, and we're also getting Professor Layton and the Last Spectre, which is the first of the new Professor Layton trilogy, the one that takes place before Curious Village. So you're going to get to learn a little bit more about Luke and Professor Layton and Professor Layton's other apprentice. And you're going to find out what is happening. What, like, does the Spectre exist? Oh, by the way, Don Paolo's not in this one. It's a completely new villain, as is the case with the previous games. Now, what's interesting about this one here is that they decide to put it out, which is good, which means that it leads right into Professor Layton and, what is that? It's like Professor Layton and the Eternal Diva, which is a movie and is awesome. And then Professor Layton and the Mask of Miracles, which will probably get renamed over here to something like Professor Layton and the Mask of Miracles. Because, honest to goodness, that's still a good name. Yes, goodness knows. Goodness knows. But what do the bees know? Well, the bees know about Kirby. And they know about a lot of upcoming 3DS games that were announced. There's a couple 3DSware games put out announced there, like Rolling Western and Paint something or other. I have to get the name down, but essentially it's kind of like Drawn to Life, but not with the depressing aspect of, say, Drawn to Life 2. And that looked kind of interesting. They also showed off, they showed off Super Mario 3DS. They showed off Resident Evil Revelations. They showed off Pilot Wings. Mario Kart, where the newest thing is that the new Mario Kart is being developed by Retro. And they added in the ability for, like, parasailing, some more customization options for your cars, and submarine cars for the first time. Should be quite interesting. We'll see what they do with this. Hopefully, they'll let you gain speed by doing quick turns you know, snaking, because that was actually one of my favorite parts of Mario Kart DS. Yeah, it got annoying online for a bit, but once you figure it out, it kind of evened out quite a bit. Hopefully new tracks, new items, that type of deal. Super Mario 3DS looks amazing. It sounds amazing. It looks like it's Super Mario Brothers 3, essentially, through the eyes and prism of Super Mario 64 and Super Mario Galaxy. Not as open-worldy as Super Mario Galaxy, so you don't have to worry about being lost. Very straightforward, more like Super Mario Brothers 3, but also fairly confined, kind of like Super Mario 64. Lots of interesting stuff for that. They also announced Luigi's Mansion 2, which, by the way, is being developed by the people who made the Super Punch-Out, like the Punch-Out game on the Wii. And it looks good. It looks and plays like Luigi's Mansion. What's kind of interesting about this is that with the news story, well, Luigi's going to be doing a lot more ghost busting, and there's more mansions this time around. And it's got Professor Egad, and he's awesome, and it's going to be great. One more thing, they launched the eShop around the same time as their conference. In fact, they launched it the night before. Now, the eShop launched with Super Mario Land, Radar Mission, and Alleyway. At the conference, they announced Legend of Zelda Link's Awakening DX. And then they announced that later on this year, for free on DSiWare, Four Swords, which is fine with me. I've got a DSi XL and a 3DS that are going to love this particular title. They also announced the ability to, you know, transfer between for your old DSiWare to your 3DS, which is great, actually. I spent a lot of time transferring a lot of the games. Transferring. Here we pronounce it correctly. Okay. You right? Good. Anyways, when you transfer stuff over from the DSi to your 3DS, it is carried over by hundreds of little Pikmin, which the Pikmin 3 got moved to the Wii U. Okay, I'm okay with that. Yeah, that should make it kind of interesting with that thing's touchscreen. But yeah, they announced this stuff. They launched the eShop. As of right now, they also moved the eShop updates to Thursday, which, in correspondence, we move our download guide updates to Thursday as well. We launched that part of the download guide, and we added Donkey Kong 1994 to it this last Thursday, which, for the price that it gives you, is an amazing value, and people should pick it up. I do believe that Donkey Kong 1994 is one of the best Game Boy games ever made, right up there with Legend of Zelda Link's Awakening DX, Survival Kids, or Final Fantasy Adventure, Great Greed. Okay, there's just a lot of really, really good games on the Game Boy that people ignored because it was a portable system. And you know what? I'm glad people don't ignore portable handheld systems anymore. I mean, everyone speculates, oh, Apple's going to take over everything with the cell phone, etc. And then they complain about these games for it being not very complex or having horrible controls. Yes, right now, cell phones are limited. They're very limited to a point that I don't really consider them to be part of the handheld family. The N-Gage was just awful, but it was the closest stab at that point. The iPhone, due to the way they structure it, and due to the fact that you can't buy games for it in retail that work properly. Like, you can't go to a store and buy a iPhone cartridge or so. It's all download only, which at this point, means that they can be like, well, okay, we were selling this before. Let's go ahead and, oh, we lost the rights for this, so we're removing it. I kind of look at it kind of the same way what happened with the Kindle, for example. There was a version in 1984 that was released on the Kindle, and then when it was discovered the company that was selling it didn't have the rights to it anymore, Amazon removed it from the Kindle devices without telling people they were doing that. Meaning, you could be on, say, page 37 of this book. Oh, you go to sleep, you wake up, the book is gone. And that happens with digital-only content. It happens a lot. Like, for example, on the PlayStation Network, Brave Story, New Traveler, which is a great game. I have the UMD for it, and I also bought it again on PlayStation Network. However, while I loved that game, now the only way to get it will be to buy it on UMD because it was removed from the PlayStation Network store. Or rather, at this point, it will be removed from the PlayStation Network store because the company that put it out no longer has the digital distribution rights for it. And because that happens, I will not cover the iPhone or the iOS stuff on DMGIs because I cannot go out into the store and purchase a copy of, let's see, what's a good iPhone game? Tiny Wings. I cannot go out and purchase Tiny Wings on a cartridge. Now, some DSiWare, yeah, you can't go out and purchase that on a cartridge, but the system allows you to do those. So, if we support DSiWare, who knows? Maybe we'll get some type of we'll get something for that someday. Maybe we'll get a retail release of, say, a Shantae sequel or something that puts Mighty Flip Champs and Mighty Milky Way on the same little 3DS card or so. Personally, I would love a remastered version of the original Shantae and then a hyped up version of Shantae Risky's Revenge on say a PSP UMD or Vita card or 3DS game pack. Is it game card? Personally, I'd like it on the 3DS because like then we could have a little bit of depth to it. They could expand it a bit. With a little bit of a larger budget, we could get more storyline to it, or at least a sequel. Personally, I'd really, really love to see a sequel. And yes, WayForward, hit us with a sequel. Sadly, that wasn't shown. There wasn't anything shown at E3 from them. Even though there was a Mighty Flip Champs is supposed to be coming to PlayStation Network. Which, by the way, is up, of course. And I think it was up last time. Yeah, it was up the last episode. It was just really glitchy. A lot of stuff has been really glitchy lately. Hackers gonna hack. Just the way it is. But going back to 3DS, Nintendo went a ways to justify it by saying, yeah, you're going to get Sonic Generations this year. A lot of these games they showed off, like Luigi's Mansion 2, for example. Luigi's Mansion 2 will actually be early next year. But this year, we will be getting Mario. We will be getting Zelda in about 2 days. This Sunday, so tomorrow. Which, by the way, I did get to sample The Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time 3DS. And, oh my god, it's great. It is great. If you own a 3DS, get that. Also get Donkey Kong 1994 and Legend of Zelda Link's Awakening DX. Get Super Mario Land. Get Radar Mission. Radar Mission is pretty underrated. It's a pretty great game. The first game A for its battleship, essentially. And then game B is, it's kind of like that sub-hunting game that was in Steel Diver. But without the whole swiveling in your seat deal, which is fine. The quietness, the tiredness. You can hear it in my voice. So, let my voice soothe you just a bit. But let's go ahead And let's talk about the elephant controller in the room. That would be the Wii U. Nintendo announced the Wii U console for, it'll be out in 2012. Here's what's known about the system so far. The system itself is slightly larger than the Wii. In fact, it's actually 10 inches long. What's funny is that there was a Eurogamer posted the specs of it that they got from Nintendo, saying, yeah, the system is 10 inches long. Another company or another website, which wasn't at E3 to get hands-on look at it, posted it that the controller was 10 inches long. And they made a couple infographics about it saying, yeah, it's seven Wii controllers stacked up. Like it was obnoxious, and it was based on incorrectly construed information. They looked at the size of the system and figured it was the size of the controller. Since they didn't have anybody there to verify, they kept this up. And then Reddit and Dig got a hold of the infographic, and then a little bit later, Kotaku picked up the infographic and ran it as news. I guess it was run by someone who wasn't there at the convention. One thing that really bugged me, actually, about the coverage of E3 this year is that nobody in their right mind got the idea to actually measure the controller or do it. Shoot, if you look through our old E3 coverage from 2006, you'll note that there's a picture of the Wii next to a cup of Venti Starbucks coffee. You see, you don't have to bring in a measuring cup, fabric ruler or any of those types of rulers, if you bring in other items that you can measure or know the measurements of later on. What surprised me is that nobody thought to do this. Like, oh, I want to see how big this is compared to, say, the 3DS or a PSP 2000 or 3000. Nobody put up shots comparing it like side by side like that. Instead, we get hand shots and forced perspective shots. Looking at the hand shots, it's very obvious that the controller is about 8 inches long. It's about the size of, it's actually slightly smaller than the Sega Game Gear in terms of like the size, the length anyways. It's about it's thinner than the Wii Remote Nunchuck deal. It's a little thinner than that, because there was, after much looking around, I found a few pictures of the Wii U controller sitting there next to a Wii Remote and Nunchuck attachment. It's a Wii Motion Plus with the little rubber thing on it, and then the Nunchuck. And you can get through those, you can make some pretty good estimates as to the size of the controller. Now, an 8-inch controller, yes, that is big. That's smaller than the QWERTY controller that they had for the GameCube. Quite a bit smaller than that, thankfully. But I think that some people will think, oh, this is too big. But, whatever. Now, the thing with things that I like about this controller, actually, are where its legacy comes from. Now, Nintendo, the whole idea of an HD Wii has been thrown around by Michael Pachter and his ilk for quite some time, because they felt that Nintendo needed to do this to compete with the PlayStation 3 and the Xbox 360. I think a lot of people are looking at the Wii U and thinking, oh, they're finally competing with them, etc., etc. Now, from what I've heard on the Wii U specs, the system is actually 40 to 50% more powerful than the PS3. And the system can run DirectX 10.1. It can't, apparently they haven't tried like any DirectX 11 stuff, which, by the way, to put this into perspective, I think the Xbox 360 can only do like DirectX 8. Same with like the PS3. I'm not sure, but I do know that neither of those can run DirectX 10, and definitely not DirectX 10.1. The Wii U is pretty powerful, actually. The final chipset hasn't been revealed, but it's apparently a custom job of this particular Radeon chip, which, if it's that right Radeon chip, then yes, it is about 40 to 50% more powerful than PS3. I do know that the dev kits are actually kind of underclocked. Nintendo purposefully sent those underclocked because they want people to work in similar environments to the where they work now. Like, the idea is, instead of going out the gate, guns blaring, they underclocked the dev kits when they sent them out. You can actually overclock those, or you can take off the underclocking. Essentially, it's like a limiter from the dev kit and use it at its full potential. But they want people to work on this lower potential at first so they can get more games out at launch. I know that seems kind of weird, but the problem is, when they want people to people to use this and be comfortable with it without, like, pulling out the rug completely and saying, hey, this thing can do all of this. You know what I'm saying? That Nintendo doesn't like to push things all the way. I guess the whole design philosophy for Nintendo is kind of, let's make the most with what we have. But let's always keep something there. Like, in other words, they showed off a lot of what the system will easily be able to do. They didn't show off what it really can do. And I do feel that Nintendo failed to really explain the Wii U to the angry mobs on the internet, which actually you don't need to explain it to them. If they were anything other than the most hypocritical Luddites, they would be do their own investigation on it. Now, a lot of people were critical of it because of the name. I mean, Wii U. That's kind of well, from an American culture where we look at this and we're like, things have to be cool. We don't think that's 20% cooler than the Wii. We don't think the Wii U name is better than the Wii name. But I guess that's kind of the way that these systems have been named before. I mean, PlayStation is a stupid name. Xbox, stupid name. Dreamcast, stupid name. The Ultra 64... oh man, that's a manly sounding name. Then they just called it the Nintendo 64. The GameCube, that was purple. It was chock full of amazing games like Beyond Good and Evil and Eternal Darkness and the Resident Evil remake and like Luigi's Mansion, two Pikmin games, Metroid Prime. There was some seriously great stuff on the GameCube. However, it had a stupid name and it was purple. It looked like a lunchbox. It looked like a children's toy, and people chided and ignored it for that reason, which to me is pretty stupid that they did that. I mean, there was some amazing stuff on the GameCube, and there will be some amazing stuff on the Wii U. There was some amazing stuff on the Wii. I mean, Super Mario Galaxy 1 and 2, New Super Mario Bros. Wii, Punch-Out made a comeback. Despite some narrative finagling, I guess you could say, Metroid Other M was great. Donkey Kong Country Returns, another great game. A lot of the stuff that the system did is great. It just, unfortunately, was shunned by people because, well, it wasn't HD. Remember, the Wii was not HD. It got up to 480 progressive, whereas actual HD is 720 progressive. Most people look at high def now and they think 1080 progressive, but the amount of games that are on the, say, the PlayStation 3 that are 1080 progressive are very limited. There's actually only a few. There's like a handful of titles that are actually like that. And a few 3D titles. But yeah, it didn't do so hot. Now, the Wii U, though, makes perfect sense from a design standpoint, because that's kind of what Nintendo's aiming at there. They're aiming at Japanese developers. Japanese developers look at it and they say, ah, I see your philosophy for that, because their philosophy is different. Over here in the United States, we look at things from like, well, things have to be bigger, they have to be better, they have to be louder, brasher. Our top brands are kind of our collector's edition, deluxe, ultra. We add on a lot of modifiers to our titles and such. Things have to be, they have to have a machismo to it. Whereas Japanese design sometimes has to go for a little bit zen. Now, the whole point of the Wii U is the idea of a cafe. When you go to a cafe, you go there for you time. You go there to be in a social situation, to meet people, but also to have some time to yourself. Now, Nintendo did not properly explain this. They sent Reggie out there to say, well, we felt that the Wii encompassed all of us, but now with this one, we will focus on you. Thus, the Wii U. Which, honestly, that's a bad explanation of what this is. Now, the philosophy is that we bring people together. With the N64, the philosophy is four people on the same system. We can bring in more community. Now, with the Wii, they were able to bring even more people into the gaming community. But they recognize that sometimes you just want an experience that is all your own. Wii Sports and all these other Wii-type games, these are great social experiences. But sometimes you just want something where you can have these social experiences, but also have something that is specifically yours. And they felt that the best way to do this would be to essentially use that handheld they canceled in 2009. Nintendo canceled a handheld which was meant to essentially work as a third pillar with the DS, DSi at the time, and the Nintendo Wii. They were developing one, and then they just canned it. They announced that they canceled this in 2009. And when you look at the Wii U controller, those screens on it, that's a new tech. The 6-inch screen is the only technology on the Nintendo Wii U controller that Nintendo is not already using in their other products. Now, if you look at this, it's got a volume slider on the top, it has a built-in microphone, a 6.2-inch touchscreen, a stylus, left and right triggers, second left and right triggers. The two of the circle pads from the Nintendo 3DS and a headphone jack and all this other stuff, it is essentially a much larger portable. I think the original idea for this portable was, yeah, we're going to put out a portable with a 6-inch screen that folds over like a clamshell, has all these other devices and such to it. Essentially, they were making a competitor to the Nintendo DS, but decided, no, the DS, DSi are doing well on their own. We don't need to do this. And then they just kind of integrated that in to the Nintendo Wii U. I think they were working on the power for it, and they were working on what they can do with that. And they thought, well, we do need something that can work as a controller for this, that can help make the experience more inclusive while being exclusive. In other words, yes, your Wii remotes will still work with the Wii U, but the idea is that at least one of you has this brand new experience. I know people are going to fight over that controller. You're going to lose friends. Happens. But they want to design games around the idea that you can take turns with this or so and a different experience So you get a social experience, but also it's different for at least one person. Now, the Nintendo Wii U is capable, according to Nintendo, of supporting more than one controller, but they feel that it's cost prohibitive to require more than one controller for the games. In fact, there was a press release they put out that was picked up by many of the lamestream news media, and they were saying, well, Nintendo only wants you to use one controller. It's too expensive, etc., etc. But when you look in the article, the actual statement is to the effect of, yes, this controller will be expensive to buy. Like, I think it's going to be about $80, $90, maybe even up to $100. Looking at the parts that are in it, the most expensive thing in there is the screen. And that screen adds about $15 to $20 worth of dev cost to it. It's a big screen. It's a good screen. It's not full HD, but it's a good screen. But they were saying that, hey, it's might be cost prohibitive to get people to have to buy a second Wii U tablet controller. So instead, they're going to require that developers develop their games in a way that you don't have to have two of the controllers. They never said that you couldn't make a game that has modes where you could use more than one controller. Just like, you know, more than one Wii U tablet controller. Just you cannot require it. I do see later on, though, I do see Nintendo revising the tablet controller a little, like maybe adding another camera or designing like different colors and stuff for it, maybe making it a little sleeker, etc. And then I see Nintendo eventually lightening up on that particular restriction. But right now, they don't want any of their launch titles to require you to have more than one Wii U tablet controller. So that's why you didn't see anything running two Wii U tablet controllers. It makes sense to them. And it kind of makes sense for like early adopters. But that's something that I think it's a little sad that they worded it the way that they did. Or rather, they didn't actually word it the way they did. They were pretty clear about it, but it was worded differently when put through the blog grinder, essentially. Now, what do I think of the Wii U controller? I think it's kind of interesting. I'm also kind of sad that they didn't show off more about the controller. You can attach Wii remotes and the Wii Fit and other Wii attachments and accessories to the Nintendo Wii U. But you can also stream stuff to your Nintendo 3DS. They already mentioned that the 3DS will work with the Wii U, which, in a way, that's actually kind of brilliant, because somebody could be using that controller, then another person could have their 3DS with them and be having an experience similar to the person using the Wii U tablet controller. This doesn't require you to go out and purchase another Wii U tablet controller. But if your friend has a 3DS, and honest to goodness, if you don't have a 3DS after Ocarina of Time comes out, or after this summer with all the stuff that is coming out, or after all the stuff that's on the eShop, I think you're kind of just being stubborn. Surrender. Buy the 3DS. It won't hurt you to buy that. Well, maybe you might have to do rice and beans and rice for a little bit, you know, because it is $250. But there will be bundles later on this year, so. Oh, by the way, also a new color. They also announced a red color for the Nintendo 3DS. And that will be out in July in Japan, and we'll probably see it close to October here in the United States. I think this is going to be an interesting and crucial Christmas season for the Nintendo 3DS. I think Nintendo's going to bring their A game to it. You're going to see some bundles. You're going to see a lot of titles out there on the shelves. And it'll be good. You'll see a huge marketing push, especially when we start getting to the back-to-school season, because that's when people really start buying stuff. But a lot of people I've noticed are holding out for The Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time 3D, which, oh man, it's so good. I cannot wait to grab my, I already pre-ordered it. It's going to be great. But also to celebrate the 25th anniversary of The Legend of Zelda, the original game, the one on the NES, Nintendo announced that if you purchase your Legend of Zelda 3, Ocarina of Time 3D game pack, and you register it with Club Nintendo, it's like 50,000 of these are made or so, but you can get the soundtrack for it sent to you free of charge, which is a great idea. I think that Nintendo has done much better with the Legend of Zelda 25th anniversary than they did with the Super Mario Brothers 25th anniversary, which is, well, okay then. That being said, I can't wait for them to put out the 3D classic version of The Legend of Zelda 1. That is going to be fun. I mean, they showed it off at E3 last year. It's only a matter of time. As for some of the other news on that, the Nintendo Wii U controller, it's not as big as everyone was trying to say it is. That was a miscommunication on the part of Electric Pig and Eurogamer. And it was circle sourced. Circle sourcing is where somebody sees something and they link to it, and then the person who made that link or made that comment or so links back to the link of it, and you see, like, essentially circle sourcing. Like, let's say I own blog number A. I put out something that says, Steve Jobs likes to eat babies. And then I send that news story out to blog number B. Blog number B accredits it to my blog. And then I go back and I change my accreditation from blog A, which is me, to blog B, which is linking back to my story. We keep doing this back and forth, and then somebody sends it to an aggregator like Dig or Reddit or Slashdot or StumbleUpon. And then it gets picked up. If you put the right type of sensational headline on it, it gets picked up and people start thinking it's true. Now, there are websites that deal with this, like Snopes and such, where, circle sourcing is bad journalism. In fact, it's actually referred to as yellow journalism. Yellow journalism was where people were trying to make the news, not break the news. Or they would sit there and say, okay, it was more or less advertisement line. Well, you'll see people be like, well, such and such horrible game is actually really, really good. 8.8, yes. Ooh. And that's really, that's depressing. But let's get on to happier things. What are we doing with Radio DMG? Well, I'm almost at the hour mark here, but I'm actually very happy to announce that we have a lot of content that we got from Akon 22. Now, with Akon 22, we launched about 1,500 pictures, and I got about half a dozen interviews. Some of these are voice actors like Jeremy Lee, and Kyle Abair. And then you've got some odd guests like Monty Ewam, who did the Dead Fantasy series, Halo Toid. He works with Rooster Teeth now. He also worked with Namco Bandai and with Midway for a while. Or Vanessa Ortega, the professional gamer, was on some show on Spike and such. Kind of interesting interview. And then some heavy-hitting stuff like we did an interview with Peter S. Beagle, the author of The Last Unicorn. And we did an interview with Team Ninja because they were at Akon 22. That's a pretty good interview. Lots of interesting stuff that we went into in that. We went into the Wii U, the PlayStation Vita, talked about everything from like who's supposed to really be the main character of Dead or Alive, which a lot of people are like, oh, we know this one already. But also like stuff like the Dead or Alive movie. We went into virtual console stuff. How they intend to use the Wii U controller to differentiate Ninja Gaiden 3 from on the Wii U from Ninja Gaiden 3 on the Xbox 360 or PS3. That's kind of an interesting answer, and definitely that will be a interview you should check out. The ones like, for example, Kyler Bear, we talk about voice acting, of course. We talk about his role in video games, because he's the voice of Ryu in Street Fighter 4. He's also the Dragon Ball Z narrator. He's been in a bunch of radio. He does the advertisements for Smodcast. So we talk about everything from anime to Kevin Smith and beyond. With the professional gamer Vanessa, we talk about everything from how that happens, how people, Dead or Alive strategies. If you like Dead or Alive or Dead or Alive Dimensions or the Dead or Alive franchise in particular, you're going to like a lot of our upcoming stuff because we do talk strategy a bit with her. And the one with Jeremy Lay, that gets into the supernatural of things. Now, the Peter Spiegel one, we get into literary things. He talks some wonderful smack about Ralph Bakshi. He goes into a lot of stuff with that. That one's an interesting interview. Also, we have let's see, the Monty Uwan one. We talk more about like motion capture, what it's like to work at Rooster Teeth, just design stuff. So there is a wide variety of stuff that we're bringing to you. And we're going to bringing to you a lot more stuff in the future. Yes, Life and Puzzle will return. So if you like the comic, it will be back up. And the new season will start running very shortly. We kind of put it on hiatus because of the huge amount of work that has to be done here. With some slight graphical upgrades on DMGIce.com. And with all the content that we have with Radio DMG, I'm not done uploading E3 2011 videos to Area DMG, which is our YouTube channel. So look forward to more of those. Yeah, some other websites have the same videos, but it's not really news until we say it is. Or until I say it is. I can look at something and say, "Thou art not news until I talk about you." And I am right. That's the truth. But yes, we're also going to be launching something called Keeping the Bridge. Now, I have a few different hobbies, if you will. I love video games and I love animation. I particularly like handhelds the most. But I also like books. I like facts. I like learning things. I like politics. I like a lot of different things. Now, Keeping the Bridge is actually the name of a show we pitched to Colorado Public Radio around here. We never heard back from them. I think they were expecting someone to go out there and be like NPR. And I'm sorry. I have too much self-respect to be someone like somebody on NPR. I know people like, but what about This Old Home or the Prairie Home Companion? Why would you diss them? I'm not dissing them. I just wouldn't want to be them. That just doesn't fit me. I'm not Howard Stern. I'm not Rush Limbaugh. I'm not Glenn Beck. I'm not who are the liberal talkers or so. Don't really know. Anyway, I'm not Mancow. I'm not these other types of radio personalities. I'm myself, and I'm not an NPR drone. A lot of them aren't very interesting. I'm sorry. Sometimes the subjects are interesting, but the way they're presented is kind of a little okay. There are some really good ones on NPR, but they don't hold a candle to APR or to some of the other programming from private companies like the EIB network, for example, or what's that other one? Mercury Media. Yeah. Or Howard Stern stuff. Howard Stern is just, yeah, he's the king of all, he's the king of all media there. He's kind of earned that. Or Smodcast Internet Radio. You can do something different with the radio medium. And what I was going for with Keeping the Bridge is originally we pitched it as an education show, like about education news. We talk, I actually do have the initial radio pitch for it, which is about 15, 16 minutes long. And we covered some of the news, like about the Obama education budget and a little bit of an explanation on what deficit is. Deficit. Anyways, we're spinning that off into its own little show. So RadioDMG.com is going to be the home of Radio DMG, Life and Puzzle, Keeping the Bridge, and a few other items that I will reveal in the future. So yes, I'm launching an educational broadcast soon, where we'll talk about different books. I will read you the Federalist Papers. I will read you the Constitution. We'll talk about the history of Canada or something, or the history of the war on drugs. We'll get interesting guests in there. And I already actually have guests lined up, which is the odd part, because I haven't even real. This is the formal announcement of the show. We already have interest in doing a somewhat conservative, possibly, news program called, you know, well, I hadn't given out the name for it yet, but we actually have interest in that. We have people who want to come in and talk about the Constitution. We have people who want to come in and talk about the Tea Party. We have people who want to come in and talk about Planned Parenthood, actually for it. We have people who want to come in and talk about drug smuggling off the coast of California, or like a lot of the same stuff that I will be like. The stuff we have lined up for this will be very, very interesting. And I look forward to launching that. So we will probably launch that in July. We'll see the first couple episodes of that in July. That will also have its own iTunes feed and its own RSS feed. And will be kept kind of separate from Radio DMG, because it's Radio DMG and then Keeping the Bridge. And then some of the other content that we have here on RadioDMG.com. DMGIce.com will be relaunching part of the library. And we're thinking of going ahead and relaunching the old reviews section along as part of the new reviews section. In other words, a re-release of some of the older user-generated content and stuff that we got from people, but in its own classic reviews section. So that can make up for the sometimes delay of newer reviews. So yes, there is a lot coming out there. But you didn't just come here to hear me announce things or to gesticulate wildly about the Nintendo Wii U controller. So you want to know what we've been up to. Now, Akon was pretty great. We did cover E3 from like a far away view, I suppose you could say, like watching the press conferences. I saw all the press conferences except for Microsoft's live. I didn't see them all. I saw them all live except for Microsoft's. I saw that one in later on, and it was like, oh, okay, Microsoft's really going down on the Kinect, and okay, that's fine. I feel that the Kinect could be interesting in the future for, like, say, AR-type stuff. I feel that anything to improve that technology is good, but I do not believe it'll replace the controller anytime soon. I do think that, actually, you should hear what some of our guests, our upcoming interviews, think of the Kinect and the Wii U and the PlayStation Vita. My prediction right now is that the PlayStation Vita is actually starting out in a lot of trouble. I mean, it's some nice hardware, but it's actually starting out in trouble. Now, the cool thing about anime conventions is that you have a lot of people that go to those who are very opinionated about anime or video gaming in general. You can get a good feel for consumer response from anime conventions and from talking to people in retail situations. The Nintendo 3DS, there are still people who haven't really sat down with the unit, and you can't really get a good feel for the unit by playing it tethered to a scratched up and horribly mangled Target or Best Buy display. I'm sorry, those are not good displays. The way they're designed, not good. The really powerful magnet, some people don't lift it from the base. They have trouble with it. They get headaches from it because they don't get to properly feel or properly utilize or mess with the 3D. You have to actually hold the unit and play with an actual unit on your own. You have to mess around with the settings there. You have to actually, this is a product where the best way to explain it is to show it loose from a tether. That's kind of the best way to sell that. And the other way is to make lots and lots of games for it, which Nintendo's doing. But from what I can gather from talking to customers and stuff, or people in a retail environment, and from talking to people at anime conventions, because people are just chatterboxes at those, PlayStation Vita is neat. Nobody really, no day one stuff. The Wii U, oh my god, it's got a controller. I mean that controller there, you can the TV, you can play the games on the controller while somebody else uses the TV. You can do all this stuff with that controller. That controller is pretty. That controller is, the screen on it is amazing. It looks a little bit big, but I think it'll be fine. That controller, a lot of people like the drawing part in that they would show off, where they were drawing like Link on it. And they also like the part where you're drawing on people in Tekken. Like the customization stuff for it. Essentially, Nintendo has attached some of the unique aspects of the DS to a larger console. I think a lot of people, when they get their hands on the Wii U controller, will be surprised, one, that it's not as huge as it looks, and that, two, it actually does help and enhance a game. For example, let's say if we take, Monster Hunter. Monster Hunter is a horrifyingly tedious game. It is slow. It's lots of slog through menus, lots of customization. But you can do all that on the lower screen. Or it's, say, one thing I'd love to pitch for the Wii U would be like a alien hunting game, kind of like the Gantz type situation, where one person doesn't act, or wait, we could make this a zombie hunting game. Now, one person can have like the Wii remote and the nunchuck. Another person would have just one of the Wii remotes, and one person would have like the Wii Zapper. And then one person would have the Wii U tablet controller. The person with the Wii U tablet controller is unarmed, essentially. They can maybe use one or two of their fists or so, but they kind of keep track of where the other zombies are. And then the other people, for example, a Wii control and the nunchuck would be like for a sword or so, or other types of objects. The Wii Zapper is, of course, a gun. And you would spend time coordinating an assault or coordinating a zombie hunt here. I think that the feel for it, it allows you to do, I think that they did show it a bit early, but I think that there's a lot more you can do with this that's compelling and unique to that controller and to that system. And I think we're going to be seeing some interesting stuff from that. I'm kind of sad that the display isn't 3D, because a lot of people are like, why isn't the display on the Wii U controller 3D? I think that's because then it'd be like, $150 for a new one? Yeah. Anyways, a lot of people actually like the ability to, talking to people, I even got a response where, this, you know, the Wii, that was something we all, like, my family really liked, but the Wii U, this is something that's really, really is for me. It's like, for me. And I'm like, oh my God, really, really? People are that exuberant about it, which is fine. I think a lot of this is going to be pretty great. I think it's going to be, well, I think once people get it in their house, get their hands on it, see what it does. A lot of the features in there are manufactured to put it as kind of a lifestyle accessory. Now, Sony is always preaching, like with the Sony PlayStation Vita, that this is a lifestyle. The Nintendo Wii U actually is a lifestyle device. You can stream, like, say, with Netflix. The actual controller, even though people are saying, Nintendo is saying, we don't think people will be able to take it out of the main room. But then you look at what they've mentioned about the specs, how it can support up to four of these. And you're like, wait, what? Nintendo has a horrible habit of downplaying a lot of their technical advances or what these things can do. Which is okay by me because it helps to temper expectations, but it's really annoying because, well, this is a controller where I could stream something to it. Like, let's say I'm going to go into the kitchen for a bit, and the Wii U's out in the living room. I can stream whatever game I'm playing and take it with me to the kitchen, make myself a sandwich or something. Actually, you know, I should have Sarah do that, but I like sandwiches. I like to make my own sandwiches because I put the right amount of peanut butter, the right amount of jelly. Rambling. But yes, one thing about it too is the video chat stuff. Now, at a press conference in South America, Sony of South America, or rather, mentioned that Skype will be on the PlayStation Vita. So, we're going to have the PlayStation Vita, which can do Skype calls, the Kinect, which was eventually supposed to be able to do video calls, and then the Wii U, which can do video calls. I think they're trying to connect this and put it into the hands of more people who can use it as a lifestyle thing. Like, you get this for your parents or so. You can use the Wii U instead of your phone. It's a weird, weird idea, but I think people will get into that. People will like that. Because people are weird about buying stuff. People don't look at, wow, how much horsepower does this have? The general consumer doesn't understand GPUs and CPUs and the horsepower for that. I'm not selling them short, but a lot of them really don't care. With a lot of stuff, it's not so much, wow, you can make all these little leaves move in the Havoc engine. It's, okay, how is this fun? How can this be fun? Because people forget that video games, at their very heart, are toys. Gears of War, that's a toy. Halo, that's a toy. Modern Warfare, toy. PlayStation 3, this is a toy. These are toys. They are no different in entertainment value than, say, Lego bricks or G.I. Joes. They are toys, first and foremost, but they can also be useful toys. Just because remember when the computer came out, people thought, oh, this is going to be only for word processing. In fact, people didn't think games would work on a computer. They're like, you can't make a computer a toy. And then we have video game consoles and such, which were designed to be toys. And then they've slowly adopted computer-style traits. Now, the Wii U is a toy. And people will look at it as a toy. They're like, wow, I can play this new Mario. I can play this new Mario game with my own Wii. So it can be Mario, Luigi, and Hitler. In a Mario cap, of course. Hitler Brothers. That's so wrong, really. I do look forward to playing as Admiral Ackbar and
Hitler in a Mario game, and I think that's going to be great. For the humor sides of it, and also the fact that I can integrate it, I can make these me's on my, for example, one thing we handed out over at Akon was the little QR codes. We had business cards where it had a QR code. If you have a 3DS, you aim the 3DS camera at the QR code and you get a me of me. Those are actually pretty interesting, and I actually do like those. A lot of people are like, oh, they put the me's in it again. Yeah, why not? That's part of the community of this. Now, I do think that graphical prowess, yes, the Wii U will have that, but at the end of the day, art style and utilization trump graphical prowess. In other words, wow, look at this really detailed jungle. I'm going to go play Donkey Kong Country 1 again. No, the thing is, at the end of the day, it's art style over art style and art direction over how many colors of paint you have. It's not the amount of paint that you have or the amount of different brushes you have. It's what you put on the canvas. And a lot of people, when looking at, say, the Wii or the GameCube or the Nintendo 3DS in comparison to, say, the PlayStation Vita or whatever the PS4 will have or whatever the Xbox 7 million will have, and say, well, this thing can do 39 zillion polygons all at once. And what is it rendering? Why should I care? It's art style and art direction over art capability. Like I said, I don't care how many brushes or colors of paint you have. I want to see what's on your canvas. And the Nintendo Wii U puts that canvas in the hands of the users. Like, for example, you could design... You could design your own tags and stuff for, say, Jet Set Radio Wii U or Jet Set Radio U, yet Jet Set Radio Universal. Actually, that's really, this is kind of the Wii Universal or the Wii Ultra. It's the Wii U. Anyways, a lot of the enthusiasm for it's been over, like, wow, I can use this. It's like DS games come home. Which is kind of a weird take, but a lot of people, like, one of the big things they like about it is that you can keep playing the game when somebody else is using the TV, which is the weird sticking point that people brought up from that. They're like, yeah, it's a crazy controller. There's a lot of stuff I can do with this controller, and I can keep playing on this controller while someone else is using the TV. Which, not living like with people who've constantly fight over the TV, this doesn't really affect me too much. But it's weird that that's what people picked up on. Now with the PlayStation Vita, it's all, wow, it's really nice. Wow, that price point is really good. I'll probably wait for the second or third iteration. It's because people do want a video out. Sony, it's not too late to put a video out in the PlayStation Vita. Do the right thing. But yeah, from what we can gather from these anime conventions, people we talk to, and from people who we talk to in stores, and then from developers, and from producers, directors, and from an art standpoint, the Wii U, it's going to be great, but it's not a handheld. The controller may have been a handheld at one time, but it's not something we're going to cover in much depth here on Radio DMG because it's not a handheld. It doesn't match our demographic so much. In fact, I feel we've talked about it way too much anyways. That'd be like, well, I got a PlayStation 3 recently. I think the best thing about it is that I can store all my PlayStation 1 games on it so far. I haven't really played much other than a couple demos and things, and Portal 2, which, wow, I would love a Portal 2 style experience on the Nintendo 3DS or PlayStation Vita. We can make it happen, and we should. Now, how would, say, Portal 2 work on the Wii U? Well, the easy thing would be like, oh, here's a map, but the more interesting thing would be I can change out, like, let's say you're playing multiplayer. So one thing I could do is, like, let's say I picked up one of the pods. Let's say this is Portal 3 or something. Like, that'll ever happen because, you know, Valve can't count to 3. But let's say I'm using the Gordon Freeman personality orb and my portal gun, and I need to keep track of something else in another puzzle. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to put that orb, like the Gordon Freeman orb, over on one part of the corner to watch something I need. Like, oh, actually, there we go. This is something we could do. And let me give a better example. Let's say we're playing Legend of Zelda, and there's a more complex puzzle. And for this puzzle, I need to monitor what's happening in an area that I can't reach. So I'm going to send over, say, a bug, like the one in Skyward Sword, and then it's going to perch over, and I can see its view on the smaller screen on the Wii U controller. So I can sit there and monitor or control using the right stick. Maybe I can control the bug with the right stick, and I can place it in an area where it will keep track or do something else for me away from me. So I can be monitoring myself, and then I can be monitoring this bug away from myself. I know that sounds a little complicated, but it will make for a more complex and ultimately more rewarding, if not just a bit difficult, gameplay mechanic. Like, I could use this here to monitor something on this puzzle. Like, let's say Metal Gear Solid, a Metal Gear game on the Wii U. I can put up miniature cameras, and then I can switch between those on there so I can keep track of the people that are around me. That way I can avoid surprises. Maybe instead of using the little menu that they used to use before, remember the little thing that told you where people were or what they were facing? They would not do that. You'd have to set down tracking devices and switch between those cameras and stuff using the Wii U controller screen to monitor where the other soldiers are. I know that sounds daunting, but it would actually work fairly naturally in a sneaking mechanic, as well as really making people realize, wow, we've been spoiled by Splinter Cell and Metal Gear Solid. Those games were way easier than we thought because we had this unrealistic radar. Now that we have to use more realism to it, it's become more, I guess, hardcore. This is Nintendo showing you that you can make more complex games. You can have more complex titles. You can do more with that. Now, easy stuff, like, let's say, a Ridge Racer type game. You're driving on the screen on top, and your rear view mirror is down on your Wii U controller. The map is down there, etc., etc. That's easy, and it's lazy, and you know that people are going to do it. It's just the way it is. I mean, Ubisoft is probably out there making 7 racing games right now, and then raving rabid 7 or 6 or whatever they're up to for the Wii U controller that will use the same types of puzzles that the DS version did. Or like a DS, like, you're going to see some of that too. Now, let's say, for example, one thing that would be good is to use the Trauma Center. And here I am just rambling more about the Wii U controller. But yeah, one thing I thought was kind of interesting about Akon was the Street Pass stuff. I picked up over 150 plus Street Passes. People added to my plaza. Actually, my Street Pass right now, we're closing in on 400 Street Passes. And then my Mii Plaza in there has about almost 170 people. I have almost maxed out the amount of people that can be in the Mii Plaza, which is fine with me. That's pretty great. It takes me about a minute and a half to cycle through the entirety of those Mii's. It's a little scary looking. Maybe I'll make a video and show you guys at some point about that. But yes, that was great. Spot Pass was great. I love the fact that I could turn on, I could open up my system, and right down there would be like a dozen or so, sorry, about 10 more throwdown challenges. Okay. It was just great. Great thing that they did there. Another thing that I liked about it was how many people had the Pokedex already and how many people were, well, still, I've got all the puzzle pieces, but the amount of people who didn't and were very grateful about that, that's great. I added some more people on friend codes. You could do the local friend code swap, and it was pretty great. A lot of the stuff works out. I would say that the amount of 3DSs out there is actually kind of scary, considering that it's supposed to not be a success. A lot of older DSs were out there, too. The DS has become kind of a... You can't go to a convention without seeing it. It's become a part of the culture. We're turning into Japan. Our birth rate is declining as we speak, and people are out there buying hug pillows. The Dakimaru are coming. The Dakimaru are coming. Dakimaru? Hug pillows. You know, they have one now that has arms. Anywho. That's about it. Actually, the trip back from Akon was actually kind of interesting in that we were instead of going up through Oklahoma and Kansas on the way back, we thought we'd shave a couple hours off by going through New Mexico and up 25 or so into Colorado. Unfortunately, the border from New Mexico to Colorado was plagued by brush fires or so. We had to take all sorts of horrible little detours throughout the mountains of Colorado and New Mexico. What happened then, though, was an interesting little story. We visited essentially the Silent Hill of Colorado in our travels, and it was something that I'm going to have to bring in Sarah to talk about. But as it's really early in the morning and she's not awake, I'll just save that for another episode. So you will just have to wait until the next fun and action-packed rambling episode of Radio DMG. Like I said, this is going to be a very unsubstantial episode meant to hype up our upcoming amazing episodes. And yes, so we will talk about our experience in the Silent Hill of Colorado. Ooh, and we will talk a bit about our interviews and more news. Until then, please hold on, wait, in anticipation for the next episode of Radio DMG.
Next on Radio DMG.
Wait, there's more. Actually, let me go ahead and say, yeah, I think that probably woke my listeners up a little. but yeah, we're going to be doing a couple interesting interviews and stuff coming up. So please look forward to that. I also want to take this time to go ahead and do some real quick shout outs to our listeners and to our other podcasts that we enjoy. Like, I did a really long and extended shout out last time to like Cross Border Gaming and Nintendo Josho Go and Giant Bomb and a bunch of others, but haven't really changed much of that. Do check out the last episode. We have very in-depth ones. But for right now, let me go ahead and mention, if you like, if this is RadioDMG.com, RadioDMG.com. If you like RadioDMG.com, check out the other family of DMGI sites like DMGIce.com. Check us out on YouTube. Subscribe to us on YouTube. Subscribe to us on Flickr. Check us out on Flickr. Subscribe to us on Facebook. Subscribe to us on iTunes, even though it's a piece of crap and it doesn't ever update the way it should, ever. OA iTunes. Subscribe to us on Twitter, in which you'll hear my inane ramblings in Twitter format. You'll see me argue a lot with e-master of cross-border gaming, which, by the way, is crossbordergaming.com, crossbordergaming.com, and you should check it out. You can also see me comment from time to time on Nintendojo. I'm in their feedback stuff a lot, mainly because I've always had some type of affiliation or connection to that site, so I like them. They're good. But let's go ahead and do a really complicated countout. Okay, I'll probably put a link to it in there. I didn't put a lot of music in this one because I was just like, I am one of the undead from the... I've been one of the undead since I left Colorado's own Silent Hill, which I'll tell you about in the next episode. Creepy as all hell. Really, seriously, creepy. But yeah, next episode, lots of neat stuff. I rambled a bit here, rambled a bit there. But yeah, next episode, a little bit more news, some release dates come out. We'll give out some more detailed impressions because by the time I record another one of these, I'll have spent tons of time on Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time 3D. And oh, it's so good. It's good. Donkey Kong 1994 is good. If we could be sponsored by anybody, that would be amazing. But I would love to be just sponsored by Donkey Kong. He'd be like, Donkey Kong. Like, yeah, he could pay us in barrels and bananas. And that'd be awesome. And I would say, yeah, Donkey Kong 1994, dude, it's only like $4 or so. And people, pick it up. What are you doing without that game in your life? Donkey Kong 1994 for the Game Boy? You need to play it. Anyways, that's about it. But yeah, I will be doing more of an... Okay, this is kind of an epilogue, I guess you could say. We won't even mention this stuff on the timestamps. I want people to be completely taken by surprise. Be like, wait, what? There's no nudity theme? Well, there will be a nudity theme in the next episode because we'll have more of the sections there. This won't be as impromptu and raw. So look forward to it. I know I do. And I know you will. And this has been Radio DMG. I am your host, Philip Wesley. And good night.
Life that they need, content, 'cause they have all they need. chase miles away. Don't cry, it's more fun to play. Penguins never complain of the wind and the snow and the rain. Happy with the life that they